We just heard about the case of 8 German saboteurs during World War II who planned to cripple U.S. industry. At the order of President Roosevelt, they were tried by military tribunal. The Bush administration has cited this case as the precedent for the creation of military tribunals to try the Taliban and Al-Qaeda detainees. We asked constitutional scholar Cass Sunstein to talk about this precedent. Sunstein is a professor at the University of Chicago Law School. His latest books are Republic.com and Designing Democracy, What Constitutions Do. How would you describe the precedent of this trial?
It establishes that the President of the United States, under certain narrow circumstances, can bypass the federal courts and create special military tribunals to try people who have violated the laws of war.
What was the grounds that the Supreme Court used in upholding the idea of military trials?
The court said that you had to rely on the federal courts if you didn't have a case involving foreign belligerents. But the court said it's been historically established that if we have unlawful combatants, that is people who violated the laws of war by fighting against us not as foot soldiers in an army, but by coming into the country surreptitiously with plans to destroy property, if people have done that, then the court said our history authorizes the president to use these special tribunals.
Was that Supreme Court decision controversial in its time?
You know, this is one of the most interesting, undiscussed issues. So far as I know, it's gotten no attention. At the time, the country was fully in favor of speedy military tribunals for these Nazi saboteurs. The Washington Post loved it. The New York Times loved it. The liberal groups loved it. The conservative groups loved it. Everybody loved it. There was hardly any attack on the use of military tribunals in the 1940s, and the Supreme Court decision was very widely, not unanimously, but very widely viewed with great enthusiasm. So it's quite interesting to figure out the shift in the 60 years or so, which has made so many people so nervous about military courts now and so thrilled about military courts then. It's unclear whether it's because people like Roosevelt a lot more than they like Bush, though they seem to love Bush, whether they like Ashcroft a lot less than they like Roosevelt's attorney general, or whether the country's had a kind of sea change in its understanding of civil liberties since the 1940s. That's my guess. There has been that sea change.
Are there other reasons why you think the whole country seemed to be behind the military tribunals in the 40s, where there's such division about it now?
Seem to be two big differences. One is that in the 1940s, the country really wasn't sure that it was going to survive. You know, we've seen since Hitler had a globe on which he wrote over North America, "I'm coming." And while we didn't know about that globe in the 40s, we knew that our future was really at risk. And, you know, practically everyone had a friend or relative or someone they know who was actually fighting or going to be fighting. And for all the threat we think we're under now, it's really nothing like that. If we had 5 or 6 more attacks like the attack of September 11th, I bet you military tribunals wouldn't be so heavily criticized as they are now. The other difference really is that the Warren Court Revolution happened at about the same time that the 1960s happened. So we had this, it's a real revolution in our understanding of civil liberties, where criminal defendants now have a huge set of rights, which they didn't have in the 1940s. The Supreme Court had done extremely little to protect criminal defendants against unfairness in the criminal justice process. Now, most Americans are really used to the idea of Miranda warnings and right to choose a counsel, right to get a court-appointed counsel if you don't have any money. And in the 1940s, you know, even with Roosevelt as president and people who for their time were quite liberal, they were not so concerned about ensuring full and fair trials as everyone really is now.
Now, how obscure was this trial? I'm sure one of the many people who were surprised to read about it and who hadn't heard of it before. Obviously, at least one person in the Bush administration knew about it. Is this considered a landmark or a pretty obscure case?
For constitutional lawyers, it is extremely obscure because it's an exotic situation that hasn't arisen really since the 40s. It's not taught in constitutional law courses. This is one of those decisions, maybe a little like Jones against Clinton, which get terrific public attention and are headlines, but aren't a big deal in terms of our understanding of the Constitution until decades afterwards, the same issue miraculously arises again.
Well, exactly what does this precedent give the Bush administration the green light to do?
The Bush administration thinks it gives them the green light to have military trials for Al-Qaeda. And the reason is that Al-Qaeda people have not fought as ordinary soldiers, but have acted as terrorists. And the Bush administration thinks that this decision says that when you have people who aren't soldiers, but terrorists, you can use military tribunals. And that's not at all an unreasonable reading of the Quirin case. The critics of the Bush administration on the legal issue say the Quirin case depended on the fact that there had been a declaration of war. We were at war, according to Congress's say-so. Now the president says we're at war, and Congress doesn't disagree, but it hasn't declared war. On the other hand, it's given an authorization to use all necessary force, and the president thinks, and as a technical matter, he's probably right, he thinks that the authorization to use force includes within it the authorization to do the sorts of things you do when you are at war. One of those things, according to this great case, the Quirin case, is that you can have military trials.
What precedent did the Quirin case use to build its case on?
There wasn't much. The Quirin case didn't have any Supreme Court decisions to rely on. It did have a bunch of practices. That is, the executive president had long asserted the power to use military tribunals in cases where they were necessary, going back to George Washington himself, who used kind of built-up courts to try people. So the court relied on longstanding practice in the executive branch and a bunch of lower court cases which had said the same thing.
Six of the eight defendants in that trial of the German saboteurs from the 1940s got the death penalty. That's another issue that has some resonance for today's military tribunals. Will there be the possibility of the death penalty? And if so, how will Americans and how will other countries around the world react to it? Because the death penalty is controversial here. The death penalty has been outlawed in some countries around the world.
Yeah, the president appears to want to make the death penalty available as an option. There's been informal discussion of requiring unanimity for any conviction if someone's going to be killed as a result of the conviction. That's probably the least we can do, yes? If you're going to put someone to death, you want to make sure that the tribunal is unanimous. I do think that a lot of people who are sympathetic to what the president has done would be nervous about imposing the death penalty without really ample procedural safeguards, including some sort of right to appeal. There hasn't been much discussion of the right to appeal, but if there's going to be a death penalty, there probably ought to be some extra party making sure that the person isn't being convicted when they didn't do anything wrong. Internationally, this is pretty complicated because other countries won't extradite people to the United States, usually if they're subject to the death penalty, because they think the death penalty is barbaric. So if we impose the death penalty, we're not going to be terribly popular with some of our allies for a day or two.
Do you think that it's possible that the Supreme Court will be called in to make a decision on today's military tribunals?
It's possible. A lot of law professors think Quirin was wrong. I confess I'm not one of them, but this was a wartime decision, and there are lots of wartime decisions that the Supreme Court isn't so excited about after war. And the Supreme Court is highly likely to be asked by any self-respecting defense counsel to strike down the Bush military order. It's unlikely, just as a off-the-cuff prediction, that the Supreme Court would intervene. On the other hand, it's a little more likely than that the court would intercede in the 2000 presidential election, and they did that.
Right, so there's no predicting anymore.
No.
Well, Cass Sunstein, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you very much.
Cass Sunstein is a professor at the University of Chicago Law School. His latest books are Republic.com and Designing Democracy, What Constitutions Do. This is Fresh Air.